Greetings, everyone. Kevin Winder here with Beyond Everything Radio, and I have a question for you. Where did we get the idea that everyone has to believe the same thing when it comes to God? You see, given the diversity of human experience around the world, how could that even be possible? Yet the mission of the church has largely been built on institutionalizing a particular process of saving souls by conversion to what I call corporate Christianity. Join me now as we look deeper at Paul's view of humanity as we learn to see beyond the religious frameworks into a faith that is ultimately beyond everything. All right, so do I have your attention? Everybody like that teaser, that opener? I hope you're planning on sticking around. You know, what I said might have sounded a little like I'm trying to, you know, pick a fight, or maybe that I'm trying to instigate something here. I'm not. What I'm really doing is kind of teasing out a little bit of what Paul has been grinding through here in this passage in his sermon to the folks in Athens. And we are in week 4 of this series. So if you have not had a chance to listen to the first 3, I do invite you to go to my website, kevinwinder.com, and check out the first 3 episodes. You can find them on my podcast for Beyond Everything Radio. And listen to what we're talking about. While you're there, make sure to sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and that'll make sure that you never miss an episode. It's always going to come to your inbox, and if you're in the Denver metro area, that'll come every Sunday morning at 5 a.m. So you'll never miss anything. Go to kevinwinder.com, sign up for Winder's Windshield, and then check up the first 3 episodes of this series. And like I said, we're looking at Paul at the Areopagus, and this sermon is, like I said in the very first episode, it's foundational. It is a sermon that really reframes theology. It reframes our practice, and we're trying to get at it a little bit. Now, if this sounds from your perspective like I'm taking a dig at religion and churches and, you know, people who go to church and things like that, then please let me assure you, that's not at all my intent. My hope, though, is to bring your awareness and to allow you to separate out the experience with God from the experience of going to church or participating in a church or being at a church, right? Showing up on Sunday does not necessarily give you an experience with God. There's a proximity and an openness and a place. And Paul is simply driving this point through. Why? Well, he's doing it because the people in Athens were so stuck in a religious framework. I mean, there are temples everywhere. There are altars everywhere. And they wanted to make sure there was an altar to even a god that, in case they missed one. And Paul is coming through and just reframing the religious structure and is saying, look, we don't climb up to God through some process. God has now come to us through Jesus Christ. It's a powerful reframing of how we access God. And the temple is not the meeting place of the altar out there in the middle of a field or in a building or in somewhere, as though God needed them, right? The place in the meeting place of God, as we learned last week, is in life and breath and everything. And that reframes all this stuff. And this opens up the bigger question. And I'm so glad that Paul put this into his sermon. And so today, part 4 is called A Nations of Feelers and Crawlers. Nations of Feelers and Crawlers. You see, this series is exploring Paul's approach to God and the God conversation, right? Being at the Areopagus, like I said earlier, is like being on a national TED Talk, right? It's the center of the modern conversation. And when we have the modern conversation about God, most people just kind of pull back and say, hey, I'm out, especially if there's religious people in the room, right? And so most people don't want to be in this conversation. We dodge the question because things immediately get weird or tense. And especially, like I said, if there's a super religious person in the room, they just don't want it to go off in a weird tangent. That's all. And so the church could really do a much better job with this question. And too often it answers back with finger pointing, fear tactics. Well, hey, you know, if you don't believe like I do, you're going to hell, right? Threats. That's a threat right there, right? Power plays. Hey, you guys just need to get your thinking right. You guys just aren't right. We have all the answers. We've studied this a lot longer than you. We know our Bibles better, et cetera, et cetera. And that's not every church, but there are many who have that kind of a posture. And I think the world sees it and is pushing back. and the church sees itself in competition, if not war, with all other religions. Think about that. What do you hear on the news channels and things like that? It's like, oh, those people, that religion, right? The church is in competition with other belief systems or other ideas. And that's our clue that the Christian faith has kind of gone off track, because it's basically aligning itself as one and the same as one of those. And it's not. Christianity, by Paul's definition, as we've been exploring, is nothing like that. It's 180 degrees off course from that. Right? Those are all how to get to God. Paul's message is how God came to us. So by now we should be gaining a glimpse of how different Paul's Christianity is from what we see so often in modern world. You know, Paul has an invitation for us to go deeper, right where we are, because the altar of the unknown God has relocated to life and breath and everything. See, Paul's admonition is not to go deeper into a dogmatic theology. It isn't to become politically involved, although there are times where that's important. This is, there are times where it's good to understand your theology and to have some kind of dogma. But he's not saying that's the meeting place of God. That's where you talk about God, but that's not the same as the experience. You see, it's not to become more aggressive in our apologetics, to start taking the offense, whereas the apologetic is a defense. Right, Paul's faith never avoids reason, right? He's right there reasoning his faith, and that there's good reason for why he believes that he believes and why we should be the same. But he doesn't stop with reason either. He doesn't just say this is a reasonable argument and that's it. No. He continues into inner experience, right? Remember, inner experience and our theology have to inform each other. So his message was so scandalous to the religious world at that time that they vowed to kill him. You can read about it in Acts 23, verse 12. They said, I'm not going to eat or drink until I kill Paul. That's how harsh his criticism was, how severe his message was in the hearing of the religious mind. It's a scandal. And it's a scandal today, too. I'm sure there are people out there who would invalidate the movement to online ministry. I know there are. Trust me, 5 years ago when I took this ministry online, I know there were people that are like, you can't be an online pastor. That's an oxymoron. There's no such thing as a virtual disciple, you know? Well, I've got news for you. Every single one of us is a virtual disciple. Now, sadly, some of our most divided and polarized groups in the world are those from religious frameworks, right? I mean, these are the ones that produce so much of the war we see, so much of the hatred, prejudice, and the division in our planet. And this is what the unbelieving world sees and just basically says, hey guys, I'm out. I don't want to be a part of that. I want to actually live to a little higher standard than just hating other people or hating everything and judging everything, right? And unfortunately, when people do opt out, they toss the baby out with the bathwater. And that's why a message like this that speaks to believers and unbelievers is so important, because I call believers to widen and I call unbelievers to narrow. It's an important nuance that I think is vital as we grow and understand. But if the people of faith could adopt Paul's anthropology, his view of humanity, it would really transform the church from an exclusive contender kind of posture into a more inclusive, restorative posture. And that's really what the world needs. The world would welcome a church that is inclusive and all about restoration. And so let's read the passage from Acts chapter 17, verse 26 and 27, where Paul goes a little bit deeper into his anthropology, his view of humanity. It says, "And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling places, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him." You see, Paul is saying that we are all different, and different is good. Different is the design. I mean, it's so clear, right? He's kind of pulling out from the story, the creation story, right? That God has made from one man every nation and mankind, right? So everybody came from Adam. That's his presupposition. And I'm not here to debate evolution here, not on this podcast. Maybe we'll get to that one here in the future. But he basically said we all came from one place, but then we all went to a very different place that was determined by God. We all had very different times that we grew up, different boundaries and such like that. And so what Paul's saying is different is good. Different is the design. You see, the times create differences. It's not the same here in Colorado as it was 200 years ago. It's not even the same in Colorado as it was 6 months ago, the way this place is growing, and I love it. So if you want a really good life, move to Colorado. It is awesome here. Times, the different times create dramatic differences between the people. Our location, our geography, right? Where we live in the world creates a dramatic difference between people. If you live on the equator and it's warm all the time, your geography creates a very different lifestyle and a different kind of person than the person who lives near the polar circles, where it's hardly ever warm, if ever. You see, every one of these creates a difference. Our cultures are so different. Those create massive differences between us. Modernity and intelligence create huge differences. You know, there are big differences in intelligence between different continents and different states and different places. And those locations have different cultures and create massive differences. Yet, that's the point. The difference is the design. You know, our preferences create differences. I mean, this is how so many churches become so different. You know, hey, I like a pipe organ. Oh, no, I like a worship band with a dude in skinny jeans and a neck beard. So those differences and preferences create differences. I'm sorry. You see how this emerges? Differences are everywhere, and different is the design. This is exactly how it's supposed to be. Yet within every difference, within every time, and within every life is this burning question, that of existence and purpose and being. That's amazing. Think about this existential reality that we're all facing. And man, the big postmodern movement is really getting here. It's asking these hard questions. It's really challenging the traditional frameworks. And I know if you come from a traditional framework, some of the teachings and the way I teach might be a struggle for you. But this is how we open up the conversation to vast differences. We're not just talking to one group of people who are almost pretty much the same. We're talking to vast different groups of people over lots of times and lots of cultures. So where do we get this idea that we all needed to make everyone believe like we do? I mean, I get that there's some kind of tribal continuity, but the Great Commission of Matthew 28 says to make disciples or students of everyone and teach them all that Jesus taught them. And so what if baptism, then, when it says to baptize them all, isn't so much about conversion as it is helping people to wake up or resurrect and get all into the flow of their life, right? To immerse yourself into your life. And I think so often religion as a whole, and this is all religions, not just Christianity, but it certainly shows up in the church, is we're trying to get people out of their life and into our church life, into corporate life, into our system, right? Because your life didn't count. You didn't score any points for Jesus until you came into the church and started doing things here. And I think that's the opposite of what baptism is and resurrection. You know, from a kind of philosophical perspective, it's being all into your life. That's baptizing, you know, and to resurrect is to wake up and to become aware of how you're living your life. These are certainly aspects that are found within these core principles of Christianity. And Paul's theology points us to a new, wider place, one where he personally lived the Great Commission, right? He's out on all these missionary journeys. He's hoping to talk to people and go around and share the good news that, hey, man, he isn't going around talking about how to become super religious. He's talking to them more about how to be liberated and to get into your life. Now, helping a person to believe and to become free, you know, the teachings of the gospel, right? These are the teachings of Jesus. The gospel, the euangelion, is all about liberation from Isaiah 61, verses 1 through 3, and where Jesus quotes that in Luke 4, verse 18. And this is all about liberation. And so it's really helping a person to believe and to become free. It's not so much about converting them to a religion. And Paul totes that line very, very well as somebody who came from a very strict religion. It's a unified belief, which is not the same as a single particular framework for God. That's a differentiation which is really hard to swallow. I mean, you might be sitting there thinking, is he talking about all roads lead to heaven? And no. But I am saying that there are many paths of awareness. And wherever you are and whatever your path is, God is there. And there might be a part of me that you're thinking, I don't know if I like this. This makes me uncomfortable. And my question is there a part of you that wants to kill me? Now, I know you don't really want to kill me, thank God, but to kill this content. And the reason I'm pushing on this so hard is because this was a scandal. You see, once I learned this, my online ministry really exploded. I mean, it took off. Once I quit trying to convert people to this alternative religion, you know, I always used to think everybody was deficient if they didn't have the Christian framework. And then I learned to see the Christian framework in everybody's framework, and all I had to do is help them complete it. Some needed to go wide, some needed to go narrow, but it wasn't so much about conversion as it was completion. And I became free to help people, you know, complete this exploration of God through the Christ experience, which is totally different than trying to convert everybody to the Christian, corporate Christian religion. And this is why Paul starts where he does. You see, he knows that we're all different. He knows his audience is diverse. He never judges a person based on their belief, but he judges them based on their proximity to God. There's a difference between your belief and your proximity. See, his admonitions help shore up the places where we lose sight of God or we lose faith. You know, Paul knows that God gives life and breath and everything to all people who are all image bearers. So in Paul's anthropology, there are not others in his mind, only variations in proximity, only variations in various states of being awake. And so Paul shows us that all people of all times have tried to address this God question, these existential questions about being and existence and moving, right? And he says basically that we feel our way toward him. We just feel our way towards him. It doesn't say we reason our way towards him. It doesn't say we rationalize or theologize or dogmatize or ritualize our way to God. It's more of a feeling. It's intuited. It's a crawling. It's not running. It's not as though you know something. There's a humility baked in. I mean, the languages here in the Greek are very helpful. It's just this nation of crawlers and feelers. And he's not picking apart the means here. And this is kind of what our churches do and our culture does. We pick apart the means. There's only one valid way. Paul doesn't get that idea. He doesn't pick apart the means. He's not addressing the frameworks, the systems, or the institutions, only that each and every one is trying their best. And some are more successful than others. And each of them have some measure of sincerity. And so what Paul is saying is that sincerity actually really matters. And, you know, I've heard this taught before by pastors who say, it's one of those things where they could be sincere, but they're sincerely wrong. And I don't think Paul gets that at all. He's saying your sincerity does matter. And I want you to ride that sincerity to its conclusion, to its completion. And so wherever you start, regardless of your culture and your framework and your belief, let's go deeper. And let's get beyond the system itself into that proximity to God. That's a big statement. And I wonder if modern Christianity would seem hostile to Paul. You know, too often religion is defined by what it's against. You know, it argues, it debates, it diminishes those who are different. I know I certainly did in many, many years of church ministry, because that's how I was taught. I didn't know any better, neither did any of the people that were around me. But look around. I mean, does the church believe that different is good, or does it believe that different is bad? Different is evil. Different is Satan, right? I mean, along the way, we became entrenched into one side of a binary framework, and we can just thank Plato for that. And now we fight tooth and nail to defend the means, the apparatus, or the structure of how we get our belief, more than we do the actual faith itself. And all too often, it's the faith system, or like I said last week, it's this box, this religion, this framework. It becomes so much more important to us than the seeker of faith who's within it and going through it. So if the seeker doesn't comply, then we retaliate, we shun, we diminish. And if you don't think it's true for you, maybe you're in a really good church, and that's great. But think of all the other faith systems where you know this is true. Like if the Amish person wants to become like the English, are they welcomed and embraced, or are they shunned? Right? If a Mormon person leaves the church and decides to go to a more non-denominational church, are they welcomed and or are they shunned and kind of put out of the system? We know this is true in Islam. We know this is true in other faith systems. And it's certainly true within the Christian church. I can tell you myself, I've left a number of churches, and each time, people who I thought were my very best friends stopped taking my phone calls. And so this is a reality that many of us have suffered under and experienced, and it's a painful thing. So is modern Christianity hostile, or is it not? Is different good, or is different bad? You see, we fail so often to see that those who are crawling and feeling their way to God are no different than us. You know, and unless they do it our particular way, we tell them their efforts don't count. And that's too bad, because your effort does count. And we're always blind to the fact that they feel and crawl within their system, within their limitation, within their culture, their context, because that's all they have ever had. And you crawl and feel your way towards God in the framework that you have, because your experience is all that you've ever had. And so when you got burnt by the church and decided to become a Buddhist or some other belief system or an atheist or whatever it is, that's your framework, because that's your experience. That's all you've ever had. God doesn't look at that and say, doesn't count. Now you switch teams and now it's all over for you. What he's looking at is the heart of the individual. Do you still long to be there, or have you always just confused God with the delivery system? And too often I find that's exactly what's happened. And that's what I think Paul is giving us, something really positive and really helpful here. The delivery system is not bad. It's fine. If you think this is a dig against church or going to church or attending church, it's not. I want you to participate to the degree that your faith asks that of you. But don't ever come to the place where you confuse the delivery system with the actual message. Don't mistake your box in your container for the contents. You see, Paul believes strongly that we're all different, and different is good. And, you know, later when he comes back on his missionary journey, he comes and he talks to Rome. And if you look at Romans chapter 14, 12, and verse 22, he explicitly tells us that we have to give an account for our own faith, not the faith of others, right? And that he tells us very clearly that our faith is between ourself and God. So he knows this is where he's going. And I know that it makes us feel untethered. It makes things feel a little ambiguous and strange and loosey-goosey, perhaps. And I know some of you are going to struggle with just how open-ended Paul's theology actually is. So if our institution, our religion, or our framework gives us a sense of power, if it gives us an identity, which most of them do, right? You go in there and you believe just like them, then all of a sudden you get to be told you're great. If it gives you a sense of superiority to others, because now you're called pastor or you're called teacher or you're called, you know, deacon or elder or whatever it is, then you may react in a similar way to the religious people did to Paul in his days. And you may have a desire to suppress or stop, you know, such a debate, such a conversation, and maybe suppress this kind of liberty. But you see, a liberated faith does spell trouble for institutions who love the means more than the message. I know that. And I don't have a problem with that. I'm happy to liberate people from institutions that are all about just the framework. But as more and more people move into this expansive, inclusive theology of Paul, this experience of faith, the means of changing, right? Change. You don't have to go through one particular framework to find it. You find it through all kinds of experience. God is in life and breath and everything. And if anything is true, this online ministry has been living proof for me that this is true. And so for those who are just barely feeling your way, and I know there are a lot of you because, man, I sure feel that way. I know just how ambiguous and free-floating the God question is. I know how uncomfortable that it makes you. Don't avoid it. Ask the God question. Who or what is God? How am I experiencing this moment, right? How do we access this? You see, Paul's invitation to all of us is not to abandon or abolish the frameworks from which we all come. Do you hear that? I am not throwing any under the bus, and I'm not touting any of them as the path. That's the nuance. It's not to abolish or abandon the frameworks. They simply are what they are. They simply are what we came from. They aren't bad. They're just limited. They only incubate us so far. It's like the chicken in the box, you know, the hot lamp. It only gets the chicken so far. It gets you out of the egg. And then after a while, you're going to need some other things. And so what Paul is doing, he asks that we don't become overly attached or distracted by the delivery system, that we actually forsake our own feeling and crawling experience. May you become really, really aware of your own feeling and crawling experience. And may we all feel our way to God. And this brings us back again to the question from the first episode. How am I experiencing this moment? Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio, and I really want to encourage you to go to my website right now and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and you can find it at kevinwinder.com. When you sign up, you'll join all the others in the virtual space. Each Sunday morning, you'll get a link to my blog, my radio program, and my podcast. You'll be the first to access new content, uncoaching opportunities, and webinars, and so much more. Sign up now and you'll get a free e-version of my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Now, go to kevinwinder.com and remember I spell Kevin like the number 7. Go to kevinwinder.com and look for Winder's Windshield and sign up today.